Now, that voice was who? Come guess now. That was Patti LaBelle. And Pat.
Hi.
Hi. How are you, Patti LaBelle?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for doing this. It's a pleasure to have you on my show.
I'm so happy to be with you.
Let me tell you, Patti LaBelle, I have to start out this way.
What?
Tell me. I wish this was live in my studio, because as I was going through my old record collection yesterday, I pulled out something that I used to dance to a long, long time ago. The Apollo Presents the Bluebells.
Oh,
that album,
really?
From 1962.
Yes.
Yes, and if you were here, I'd have you sign it, but you're not.
Well, when I meet you, I'm going to have to do it.
It's not,
Oh, yes, next time I see you.
All right, because it's interesting. When I saw the book and it came out, I mean, I literally have been dancing, listening to music since I was a teenager in the early 60s, and it's just,
thank you.
One of the things I was thinking about, looking at the book and listening to music again as I was preparing for the show, and I just put on a lot of your albums one after another, just kind of getting into the feel of what I was going to do here. I was thinking about how music changes from then and now, and your music in a lot of ways, I mean, it still holds on to the roots of gospel and soul.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you.
You know, and it's funny, when I watch kids dance today, they always seem to dance so far apart. It's like, I remember when we were kids, it was slow dance, fast dance, slow dance, fast dance. Does anybody dance slow anymore?
No, nobody holds hands when they dance. Like when we did the bop, we held hands.
That's right.
Remember? Swing and all, whatever. But nobody, actually, you don't need a partner to dance these days, which could be good, because if you went to a disco, honey, and you didn't have anybody to dance with, honey, you can get down with yourself.
And nobody would know.
Wouldn't have a clue. So I think it's good in a way. Yeah, everybody can just do their own thing.
Now, your book, Don't Block the Blessings, Revelations of a Lifetime. A lot of people have been looking forward to this coming for a long time. The woman who wrote it with you, Laura Randolph, works for Ebony?
Yes, Ebony Magazine, and she's like one of my best friends and one of the best writers that I know. And she's the person that when I said okay to the book, I said, okay, if I'm going to do the book, Laura has to be my co-author, because she writes the way I talk, you know, and she made, you know, it just made it feel as though Patti was talking to you when we finished together, because she's just wonderful, and she's just so, so, so talented. I love Laura.
Well, it's an absolutely readable book. You just kind of grow through it. It's like cut and butter. I mean, it's just,
oh, thank you.
It's a lovely
thank
book.
Thank you so much.
Now, when you grew up in Philly.
I grew up, yeah, in Philadelphia.
And one of the things I get a sense from reading the early part of your book is that when you were young, you were, as you describe yourself, as being very insecure, very shy, intensely shy, I think is the way you almost described it.
Yeah.
Nervous speaking to people.
I'm still that same way.
You know, it's funny. What is it, do you think, about, because I can become very shy, and a lot of people who do things on the air can be really shy in real life, so
off,
to speak.
Yeah, it's like off stage and off mic. I mean, you find yourself, like, just wanting to be to yourself. Not because you don't like people, because I love people, but I'm very, very shy when it comes to talking. But when I have to sing, that's no problem. I mean, on stage, the lights come on, and I come on. Off stage, I just go back into my shell. And I've always been that way. And I'm very insecure in meeting people, because I might meet somebody and they might break my face. You know, so I don't go up to people and say, oh, I am, because I'm afraid of being embarrassed by someone. And I just, like, stay in the corners. I mean, I really do. And on stage, you wouldn't believe that, you know, because I'm so outgoing up there. But off stage, I am just a plain old Patti girl. Plain, quiet Patti girl. I am.
No, I believe you. I believe you.
And I just like to go and find things to do myself, like, things that you don't need company with, like cooking, cleaning, arranging flowers.
I bet you can cook, too.
Baby, I can cook my face off. I mean, the next book will be a cookbook.
Will it really?
I'm doing a cookbook, yeah.
Oh, good God.
I love to cook. And
Southern
I travel
cooking,
with my pots and my suitcases. Like, we have electric fry pans.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like electric steaming pots, because when you get to the hotels, you don't want room service.
Right.
And you know by the time you finish spending like $40 for breakfast, like for an egg and a piece of bacon.
That's right, right.
You are so mad you don't even want to eat it. So, honey, I go find the supermarket, get my groceries, or find a fresh fish market, get my fish, and I bring stuff back and buy plastic cleaning things, utensils and stuff, and clean my greens or my vegetables in a plastic thing, because you don't want to use those hotel sinks.
No.
And you clean your food, and you cook your food, and then everybody knocks on your door because they smell this aroma coming out. So So I'm always cooking on the road.
And here people, you thought it was for the music.
Huh?
You thought it was for the music.
Yeah, for the grub. Really.
So you mean you go to these people's fancy hotels and stay in these gigantic suites and cook in their suites?
I do it at the Four Seasons. I don't care whose hotel it is. If they give me a suite, you know, which I usually get like a suite, and sometimes the suites don't have real kitchens. So I make my own kitchen. I set up my pots. It looks so country in there, but it's my room. I mean, when I finish with that room, it just looks like a whole nother hotel. But I clean up well.
I'm sure you did.
I'm a clean cook. Yeah, a neat cook, too.
It sounds good to me. My guest this hour is Patti LaBelle. She has a book out, Don't Block the Blessings, Revelations of a Lifetime. When you talk about your parents, I'm going to go back and forth here between different stuff, but when you talk about your parents, you describe your father, I think you said he was so smooth he could sell ice to an Eskimo.
Yes, he could. And you know what? I'm with a few people about an hour ago, and this lady who knew I was in the building brought some pictures down, and it happened to be a picture of my father.
Really?
Where do you? I was so shocked. I said, look at my father. This lady knew him. He was so clean on this picture. I mean, he looked like somebody from GQ. He dressed his face off, and he could sell ice to Eskimo. He was that smooth. Yes, he was. He was a Rolling Stone, too.
From what I gather.
Home. I'm serious. And he's just, his memory is so, so many wonderful things. He was a wonderful father.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great husband until he couldn't be any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he fought a lot. And he had a temper. And he and my mother got into arguments and fights. And I would watch. And I couldn't take sides with neither one because I was mommy's baby and
right.
daddy's little girl.
That must have been so hard, though.
It was so hard because you don't want to not love, you know, your mother or your father, and you don't want to side with anyone. So they knew that their fighting had gone too far because I would break out in hives and my sisters would go through other reactions, and my mother and father realized that the best thing for them to do before they killed each other was to divorce, and for the kids' sake.
Now, how old were you when they divorced again?
I don't remember, maybe 12 or 15.
It's funny, you know, as much
See,
as...
See, I don't remember anything about, like, years or ages. I can't remember that.
You just block that stuff out in some ways.
Well, yes. I guess that's why I don't remember a lot of the ages and things that happened to me in the past because they were so unpleasant.
You know, I think people do that. I was talking to some people the other day about that. There's chunks of time in my high school period that I couldn't give you specifics. I don't remember a lot of them. I just kind of, they're just gone.
Yeah, you don't remember
them.
The year.
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember how old you were. You just know, for a fact it happened.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm not that kind of girl. My memory is not cute.
But you
are. Certain things. Oh, thank you, dear. Thank you.
Let's go to the phones and ring folks into this conversation. Patti LaBelle is my guest here on the Mark Steiner Show. And Paris in Annapolis, you're on the air.
Hi,
it's
I'm
not
Paris
the governor.
Lane. I'm calling from Annapolis, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
Hi.
Hi, Patti. I met you at the, the Babalot bookstore. I bought like four books.
Bibelot?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you remember the name, but
uh-huh.
I didn't.
Yeah.
And I bought my daughter up, Little Raven, and I didn't say much to you. I just said, God bless you.
Uh-huh.
I sing professionally, and as a matter of fact, I just finished working on a project with one of your old producers. I shouldn't say old, but...
Skip
Starbore.
Skip?
Yeah.
Yeah, Skip is my friend.
Okay, because Skip lives right in Baltimore.
I know.
Yeah. And my question to you is, as a professional singer,
mm-hmm.
I have always, have this thing about my craft, you know, to sing in key, to always be ladylike and so on and so forth. And I'm having a problem personally with the way that black music is going today, the younger kids, with not being as talented, per se, during the music, the people that were coming up in the 70s, just sampling here and there,
right.
singing out of key, girls taking their clothes off.
I know,
and
guys pulling at themselves.
I'm having a major problem with this because...
Mm-hmm.
As black entertainers, this is something that mm-hmm. we led in the entertainment industry, and I feel that we're really losing grasp with it.
But
with
you
the
know what?
Kids.
Okay, and I know exactly where you're going, and I know how you're feeling, because I feel the same way. And my solution to that, the only help that I could be, is when I see these young kids, I talk to them. I stop the girls, because there are a lot of young girls who are in the industry now, and they look up to me for some reason, and it's like I've been where they're going to go. And I believe in, like, passing it on
mm-hmm.
and not just a piece of bread. I believe in passing on information to them. As a saying, girlfriend, when you get on these TVs or when you get on or when you do your video, don't hold yourself. Don't don't do that stuff. It's not necessary. I always give them information, and a lot of the young girls have my phone number at home, and they call me for advice. And I believe that we, as older women, should pass on positive information to the young kids, because sometimes they don't know that they're pulling themselves, or they don't know that they're coming off negative, or they don't know that they're influencing younger children who are looking at them. So my job is to talk to them like they're my sons and my daughters, and I always do. I always do.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was thinking, Paris, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Paris.
Glad
you joined us.
Thank you. Thanks. Hi, Raven. All right. Thank you.
Take care, Paris.
Okay.
Leroy in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, Patty.
Hey, Leroy.
How you doing, baby?
I'm fine, honey.
I just want to tell you that I love you.
Oh, thank you.
Everything you do is great for me.
Say that again?
Everything that you do is great for me.
Oh, I appreciate that.
All right, and be good now.
I promise you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Take care, Leroy. Yeah, it was. Well, you're gonna get. I'm sure you get a lot of that, though.
I thank God for it. Yes, I do. I do.
But you need to, part of it is, you know, I mean, you have been on stage a long time. You've been singing a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That you're so dedicated to your art. But you think that maybe one of the reasons also people are drawn to you is not just how powerful and soulful your voice is, but the fact is that you seem to dedicate yourself to people beyond your art.
Yeah, you know, the reason I do is because I feel so connected to people, and I know for a fact that we're all the same. We bleed red blood, and my name is on the marquee, and yours isn't, not yours per se, but some of my people who like me, my fans.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only difference, is that you can see Patty's name on a marquee, and you might not see theirs. And for me to go to Hollywood on my fans or my friends, or to act ugly, which I've seen so many entertainers do, it makes my heart hurt. And
mm-hmm.
I would never embarrass a fan. So if you see me on the street or something, and if you ask me for an autograph, and if I don't do it, it's only because I'm running to a plane that I won't be able to get after I miss it, or something crucial. It's never because I don't have time for my fans, because I always have time for the people who made me who I am today.
That's such a beautiful
thing. I love people. And I hate to see people embarrass people or mm-hmm. totally turn them off or say, I don't have time to talk to you, you know, and just move out of my face. I hate that.
It's interesting when you just use the word that when I was reading your book that you
what?
When you say, can I speak to you before you go to Hollywood?
Right.
That Nona Hendrix came up with?
Well, see what happened. I had this saying a long time ago. I said, oh, that child, I'm going to Hollywood. Or she's trying to go to Hollywood. You know, it was a person like with an attitude, like a superstar attitude mm-hmm. or something. I said, and they're so ugly. So I said to Nona one day, I said, Nona, could you write a song with this title? So she said, what? And I gave her the thought. I said, can I speak to you before you go to Hollywood? You know, so that's where that song came from. And it's so many people I see who are big. I mean, they're just big.
Mm-hmm. And
living large and don't even have a reason.
Right.
You know, don't even have a reason. And, no, you know, it's just so funny. I see these people. But when I see those children, also, it's my job to talk to them and say, girlfriend, it ain't all that. Or boyfriend, don't even try it. I do this.
That's good. Someone needs to do it. Bring people
down to
earth.
Somebody needs to pull their coat.
I mean, I guess you've also remained very close to the church.
Oh, say that again?
You have remained very close to the church,
well,
maybe.
Well, I can't lie and say that. I remain very close to the church. There's a church in my heart.
Mm, that's what I mean.
But, like the church itself, the building, I don't go to my church in Philadelphia because the minister there is a hypocrite.
Mm.
And he made me feel so awful a couple years ago.
Mm.
He said to me that we needed a choir to sing at a function for cancer, and I was like the spokesperson for this particular night. And the choir that I sang with, the Beulah Baptist Choir, we wanted them to be a part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I am not letting my choir perform for that girl who sings rock and roll. She's a devil or something.
What?
And so I was saying, my heart was so hurt. I said, how could he call anybody who's a child of God anything but something special?
And this
God's
is your minister,
creation.
Too.
But he thought that since I was singing, doing rock and roll tours, that I wasn't a decent person. Of course I sing rock and roll. Of course I sing gospel also. And of course, in my heart, there's a God. But after seeing people like this, I said, well, this man, maybe he shouldn't be up there preaching because he's going to discriminate. He discriminated against me. I said, well, I guess if he saw someone homeless, he would definitely not want to talk to them. You know, I mean, this man is deep. So I said that I can't go to that church as long as he's a minister there. You know, so I do. I have church in my heart. So mm-hmm. so heavy. I mean, and God is always there.
Well,
always.
It clearly is. I mean, you have been. I know you. In your book, it was very heart-rending to read the parts about losing your sisters and how all of them died before they were 44.
Oh yeah.
But and you're raising their children.
I'm raising Jackie's children, Stacy and Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two adopted sons, Stanley and Dodd, and I have one natural son, Zuri. And
who you call Z?
Huh?
Who you call Z?
I call ZZ.
That's
you're
what you're
Z,
what
call,
right? My grandson is called Z, too. That's why I kind of
oh,
like
really?
That. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's my Z. And I, like I said, my sisters all died young.
Uh-huh.
Sister Jackie of lung cancer, my sister Barbara of colon cancer, my sister Vivian of lung cancer and brain cancer, and my father of prostate cancer and Alzheimer's, and my mother of diabetes, and she had a stroke. And my best friend of breast cancer before she was 44. So I thought that I would not make it to be 45.
Do you think about that? Does it dwell on you, the fact that it happened to so many in your family?
Yeah. And so after I turned 45, I said if I could just make it to 50, then I'll be over the hump. So I'm 52 now. So, you know, I mean, of course, you get up in the morning and you thank God for every moment that you have on this planet. But I appreciate my life. Much, much more since the deaths of my mother, father, and my sisters. And I try not to think about death and try not to think about getting cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it's going to enter my mind every day.
Sure.
It does, but it's getting better because, like I said, I'm older now. I'm 52, and I've done something that they didn't do. But then I start feeling guilty as to why me and not them.
Oh yeah.
I mean, why them and not me? I'm sorry. Why did they have to go, and why am I still here?
And you always go back and ask yourself questions, like the part you were writing about with your sister who asked for the egg sandwich, and then you said, I'm just too busy, and then it mm-hmm. didn't happen. I mean, when little things like that happen, they just stay with you. It's hard to shake them.
I'll never shake some of the things that I've done to my sisters because they were so harsh, and they were just like, not sisterly, but you do them to your sisters because they're your sisters.
Right.
You know how you fight with your sister and your brothers
yes,
because
absolutely.
You know that they're going to love you no matter what.
That's right.
You can do anything to them, and they'll come back to you. And the thing that I did with my sisters is I didn't give them me. I gave them money and material things and never thinking that they really needed me as a person just to be there for them with my time. And so I didn't share that with my last sister, Jackie, and she was like the Patti LaBelle fanatic, and
mm-hmm.
she loved me so. It was just it's such a long, long story, but the bottom line is she died before I got a chance to say to her how much I loved her and how much I appreciated her. And the only thing that I can remember is that sheet being pulled over her face in the morgue and talking to the sheet and saying, I'm so sorry. And what I say, like the lesson, there's so many lessons in the book, and the lesson in mm-hmm. that is, we have to take advantage of today because tomorrow is not promised, and we have to tell our loved ones tonight that we love them, and don't try to wait for tomorrow, honey, because it could just happen the way it happened with me and my family. They all just left.
They just left, and
I was left with nothing, nobody to talk to.
That must have hurt so much. I mean, that's a lesson that you have to, I mean, that's a lesson that's important for all of us to hear and learn. I mean, you just, because if you're lucky, you do have a family that throws out that unconditional love, which you don't always get.
You don't get that always. And you know, I mean, like I was lucky and I got that from my family, but
mm-hmm.
I should have talked to them more when they were living. And now I have pictures to look at of them, and you look at the picture and you say, I love you. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to their pictures a lot.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
It's not a good place to be, but
right.
we grow from those bad experiences, too.
And you've got her children, and
I
you're raising them as your
children,
own.
Yep.
So,
and they remind me all the time. They say, Mom wouldn't want you to feel this way. She loved you, and she knew how much you loved her, and stop beating yourself up. You know, so I have to try to stop beating myself up, and I will eventually.
Well, since we only have you for like 10 more minutes, let me bring some folks in the conversation so
okay.
I don't hog the whole talk for myself here.
Charlene
in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi,
hello.
Charlene.
Hello there, Patty.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Now I'm talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
Listen, I was there at Bibelot's the other night, and you signed my book for me, and
oh, really?
I was the one that brought you the yellow daisy, the flower.
Oh, yes.
And you remember?
I remember.
The
flower didn't live too long after that, but I took it with me.
Did you really?
Yes.
I was hoping so. I had a hard time finding something special to give you.
Oh, thank
you. I feel like through the years you have given me so much, you know, musically, and beyond that, I think just the type of person that you are. As big as you are, you know, you as an artist, I'm really inspired by your life experience and the fact that you are still grounded.
Yes,
you know,
my feet are flat on the ground, and literally as we speak, I just had on some 5-inch pumps, and I took those shoes off, and my feet are right on the ground, barefoot, and looking bad. But they're on the ground always, because I think that's the best way to be in life, is to be a grounded person.
Yes.
And to like I said, put yourself on the same level as everybody else.
That's
because
right.
I'm no better.
That's right.
You know, and I if I saw myself going that way, and I always tell my friends, if you see me going to Hollywood, beat me. Somebody call the attitude police and just check me, because sometimes people don't know that they're getting grand.
That's right.
You know,
that's
unless
right.
people around them tell them. But I would know for a fact myself. I think I would say, Miss Patty, you're going a little too far, Miss Singh. Come on back. It ain't
right.
all that.
Right.
You know, so I do have, and my husband wouldn't dare let me go to Hollywood.
Wow, that's
you know,
wonderful.
So I'm happy about the people that I have around me.
Yeah, well, I love you dearly. I
Thank
have been
you.
In love with you since I saw you live at the Carter Baron in 1978.
Oh, gosh, I remember that.
Oh, man, that was the first time I had seen Patti LaBelle live. I mean,
really?
I had your music up until then.
Oh.
But a friend of mine said, you have got to see her live.
I love that Carter Baron.
From that moment, I was like Patti LaBelle, and you signed my poster for me, which I found. I just happened to go into a thrift shop, and there it was way in the back of the store. And I bought it immediately.
Oh.
And, of course, you weren't supposed to. They told me not to give it to you.
I know, at Bibolo, right?
Huh?
At the bookstore?
Yeah.
And I wasn't supposed to sign
anything. Don't give her that.
You
can't sign it. Why don't you let me hold it? You know, I'm
right?
like, no, I'm going to give it to Patty.
Oh, I remember you now. I remember.
But I'm giving it to her.
Yes.
So, I just appreciate it. And I just wanted to, you know, let you know that I really appreciate everything about you.
Well, thank you
and,
so much.
And please continue to be the inspiration that you are to so many people.
I appreciate that.
All right, Patty.
Thanks a lot, and hope to meet you again.
All right, I will.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much.
See you, Charlene.
Do you remember Patti LaBelle years and years ago playing at the Royal Theater?
The Royal Theater, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they tore that down, didn't they?
They did. I saw you at the Royal Theater when I was a kid.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes.
And we used to play there, what, 5 shows a day?
Yes, you did.
People don't believe that, and it was like, I think it was 7 days a week. I don't know if we had Sundays off, or I think it was.
I think Sundays were off then.
Something was off.
Yeah,
maybe we did 6 days, but it
right.
was the hardest stuff. I mean, because when we came off, the half an hour was in, and then you were back on stage before you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
But those were wonderful shows.
Well, those
I mean,
were incredible
shows. That's when you could separate the women from the girls. I
right.
mean, you worked really hard. You worked like Kunta Kinte back in the day. I'm serious. We worked.
It was a, the Royal Theater was like, it was, well, look, someone else is walking around for my next interview. We'll get to this in a minute.
Okay.
Welcome. I remember that the Royal was like Baltimore's Apollo.
I know, and the Philadelphia Uptown.
It was
you know,
just,
because every city had, well, not every city had one, but Baltimore, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago had
right.
the Regal.
Right, the Regal, that's right.
Yeah, and that was wonderful, the Royal Theater. I used to look forward to coming to, you know, Baltimore to play at the Royal Theater, and plus I would look forward to getting those hard shell crabs.
Yes, that's that story. So when you got married,
right? I got crabs, but I didn't get them the other. You could
you
take them two ways.
You were talking about hard shell crabs,
but, right? My honeymoon night, right?
Right.
When I said the story, I said it because it was. It ended up being so funny one day. I said, "On my honeymoon, I got crabs," and so somebody said, "What?" And they were like shocked. I said, "Why?" And I thought about the way I just said it. I said, "No, no, no." My husband went out and bought me a bushel of hard shell crabs. And then we had our honeymoon. So that's what I was living for, getting married close to Baltimore. And that's what we did. We got married in Maryland and at a Justice of the Peace. And for our honeymoon that night, we went to my cousin's house who lived in Maryland. And Armstead, we had gotten our little champagne. I said, but before we can have our little kissing moment, darling, I must have some hard shell crabs. And he said, you got to be joking. I said, no, I wasn't pregnant and was like craving crabs. And so he went out and found, they went to a few places, and they finally found me some really hot, freshly cooked crabs. Because they have to be
That's
freshly
a great
cooked,
story.
You know. Yeah, so I love Baltimore.
Let me see if we can squeeze another call in here before it gets too late, because I know we have our next guest has arrived, who's another old soulmate of yours, Martha Reeves. Or Martha Reeves.
Martha.
She's right here in the studio at this
Hi,
moment.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, Martha.
Hi, baby.
How are you,
You're
sweetheart?
Sitting there talking about crab. You love lobster, too.
But now that I can afford them, right? But
the
you
last
know,
time
back
I saw you in Los Angeles.
Whatever I could get.
Remember in Los Angeles, sit there and you killed that lobster.
Right, I killed it.
Yes,
how
you did.
Doing? Oh, see, and I've been talking
so you
about
wrote a book
on this
too.
Book tour too. Yeah,
it's not an autobiography.
It's an autobiography.
Okay, that's what somebody said.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Your picture on there is lovely.
Thank you. I am so happy to talk to you.
You go.
Patti LaBelle, thanks so much for taking this half hour with us.
Thank you, too.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you. And there's a way for you to give Martha the number of my company that...
We'll do that.
Would you please?
No problem.
Okay, and she can just call me with hers.
Take care.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you so much,
Patti
LaBelle.
Bye.